part of you here also learning in the process. Welcome, the meeting is open. Can I now invite the DG to lead the item, this briefing. She will guide us as to how we are going to approach it. Over to you, DG.
Sorry, Chairperson. I just received a message saying that the DG will be joining our later. She's in a ministerial cabinet committee meeting, and that Dr. Naidu will lead the delegation from the department.
Over to you, Dr. Naidu.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, all honorable members of the committee. I see Honorable Minister is also in the meeting. So thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me just get the presentation going.
I'm not sure if I hear you well. Are you saying the minister is part of the meeting?
Honorable Chair, I do see in the list of attendees. Oh, okay, it's no longer there. So, all right, let me proceed.
Okay.
All right, I just want to confirm if my presentation is viewable.
Yes, proceed.
All right, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So, the presentation that I'm going to be making is going to deal with the following matters. I'm going to provide a brief background as to what lives in the bill, the journey that we've taken to arrive at the point that we are at, structure of the bill and what lives in it, some details around the proposed amendments in the bill. And then at the end of the presentation, to give a snapshot of the various processes, the responsibilities as they come together when the bill becomes operational. Honorable Chair, we've also, as part of preparing for this engagement, had shared the bill together with the memorandum on the objects of the bill with the committee as it was introduced into Parliament. So just as by way of very brief background, to say that the amendments that we have in the Independent Municipal Demarcation Authority Bill has been informed by inputs that we received by previous, as well as the present demarcation board, informed by many of the lessons learned by outer boundary changes that have been made, as well as by ward delimitation, litigation that these processes were subjected to, as well as inputs from various stakeholders over a very long period of time. So prior to the bill being published in the Government Gazette on the 17th of June 2020, we had undertaken quite an intensive workshop over a two-day period in March of 2017. And in that engagement, we had, as our primary stakeholder, the Demarcation Board, IEC, SALGA, various national government departments, all our provincial COCTAs, as well as other stakeholders, including the South African Cities Network, for example. So post the process of obtaining public comments, we had convened a two-day session in December of 2020, where we considered the comments that were received. And due to the very magnitude of the amendments that were being made to the bill, it necessitated that the act that we have in place presently be repealed and be replaced with a new act. Now, this is not uncommon because we also had the South African Human Rights Act that followed the same process. So just in terms of the journey that we've traveled to get to where we are, so initiated in 2017, or perhaps even before then, but in July of 2017, we had been provided with the socioeconomic impact assessment study on the pre-certified bill. We had engaged with our stakeholders in the local government, MINMEC. Various engagements, as you would see, from 2017 up until 2019 with the Chief State Law Advisor, presentation to the then Governance and Administration Cabinet Committees, as well as the technical committees. But at the bottom of the slide, you will see those two dates highlighted in orangey-yellow color, 14th of February 2019 and the 8th of October. And those two dates signify the transition or the period when we were preparing for and had the national and provincial elections that had taken place of May in 2019. So that period of 7 to 8 months where there was no real work that could be done on the demarcation or the IMDouble at the time. The next slide on the top, you would see those dates highlighted in yellow and indicating that at that time, engagement had taken place within the JISCIT committee, the revival or the resuscitation of the bill, but also the committee asking that we give assurance that the bill did not impact on the forthcoming local government elections. At the bottom of that slide, in March of this year, we had gone to cabinet, cabinet committee, presented the bill. There were further revisions or comments that were made that necessitated further engagement with the Chief State Law Advisor. The bill was finalized, revisions made to the memorandum on the objects of the bill. And then, following the rules of Parliament, introduced the bill formally into Parliament on the 21st of June. So the structure of the bill is as such. We have 52 sections in the bill, 5 different chapters, and each of the chapters we've identified as being constructed as indicated on the slide. So we also indicate on the slide here the number of sections per chapter and a very high level in terms of what lives in each of those chapters. So when we look at the architecture of the bill, so we now refer to it as the Independent Municipal Demarcation Authority Bill. And we've done this so that it makes very strict alignment with the provision in the Constitution, which says in Section 1553B that national legislation must establish criteria and procedures for the determination of municipal boundaries by an independent authority. So you will see that the title of the bill expresses this provision that is in the Constitution. We have in the long title now, amongst others, also provided that one of the functions and responsibilities of the demarcation or the authority is that it would need to undertake capacity assessments of municipalities. a matter that is presently provided for in the Structures Act, in section 3 of the, or clause 3 of the bill, we provide for authority, and now making it clear delineation of the board and the administration. When you look at the functions of the authority, we now include specifically that an additional function of the authority would be to conduct municipal capacity assessment. Although it is provided for in the Structures Act presently, we use the opportunity of the IMDA bill process to make sure that all of the legislative provisions, be it in the Structures Act, be it in the Systems Act, be provided for in a single piece of legislation dealing with the authority. Significantly, on this slide, when it comes to the appointment and the composition of the board, we now provide that the selection panel will consist of of a member from the portfolio committee, the COCTA portfolio committee in the National Assembly. Presently, it is just the select committee that is represented in the committee, but we've also now extended the panel to include a representative from the National House of Traditional and Khoisan Leaders. Section 11 is quite significant in that we deal with the term of the board. Now, at the time that the bill was published for comment in the Gazette, with the provision that related to the term of office indicated that the term of the board should be 7 years. Now, that was to ensure that the board in place would be responsible for both outer boundary changes as well as ward delimitation by a single board. Because presently what we've had ever since the first board is that the responsibility of outer boundary changes was done by one board, the term had come to an end, and then you had another incoming board that had to take over the finalized boundaries by the board, and they would then have to deal with the delimitation of wards. So what happens now in the IMDA bill is that we've aligned the term of the board to the term of municipal councils. So that entails that the board that we would have in place would be responsible for both outer boundary demarcation and determination, as well as for the delimitation of wards for the same term of local government. So the term would end 6 months after the commencement of the term of local government, and then, you know, emphasizing that the board would be responsible for both of these huge functions that the authority is responsible for. The next slide or clauses in the bill deals with the committees of the board, but excluding the power for a committee to make a final decision on the determination of municipal boundaries. We have now the board or the IMDA bill or act to be aligning with the Public Administration Management Act of 2014. It provides for secondment of officials from other organs of state. But also, you know, the provisions that we have in the IMDA bill aligns a lot with our new generation legislation. And specifically, when we have a look at the Border Management Authority Act that was recently assented to by the president. And I mean, recently, it could have been, I think, 2020, 2021. The provisions now also make mention of alignment with SPRUMA. Factors to be taken into account significantly. A new addition in the bill now includes the views of the people and communities living in the area. So the board must take this into account when they do deal with boundary demarcation. So at the center of, and as you will see when it comes to public consultation and participation, etc., at the center of demarcation, be it outer boundaries or delimitation of or the inner boundaries of municipalities, we've emphasized that public consultation is at the center of all of these processes. So an important provision that is now included is that major boundary redeterminations will only take place after every 10 years. We've defined upfront in the legislation that a major redetermination would be the movement of one or more wards. So if that is the case in a municipality, it will only take place after every 10 years, but that does not stop the authority from doing minor technical adjustments as they would do from time to time in their ordinary course of their work. The authority will not determine or redetermine municipal boundaries after the minister publishes the formula determining the number of councillors. So as had happened in preparation for the 2016 local government elections, the delimitation of wards to some extent had been finalized, but then a further redemarcation process had been undertaken. And this, you know, had led to some challenges being experienced when it had come to preparations for local government elections, the transition matters that had to be attended to and finalized before the elections, as well as to be managed after the elections. Importantly, in section 33 or clause 33 of the bill, or perhaps first in section 31, the board or the authority must also provide reasons for its decisions. So presently, the board will publish its final determinations in the Gazette, and that's the end of it. But now, the board or the authority would be required to provide reasons for the decisions that it would have taken. In clause 33, authority would be required to publish a delimitation of wards timetable in the Government Gazette. So pretty much like we would have the IEC publishing a timetable of events, major milestones that they would need to achieve, commit in terms of dates in the Government Gazette, the authority would now be required to do the same in terms of how they would undertake or the time frame for outer boundary demarcation, the formula to be published, ward delimitation, etc., all leading up to the holding of local government elections. In clause 35, we indicate the norm that must be adhered to when ward delimitation takes place. But we also say, and this is based on attempting to ensure that we do not have split communities in the main, but also in instances where geographical areas impedes the determination of ward boundaries. So we say in those instances, the board may deviate, but by not more than 30% of the norm. So in clause 37, we say that the board must also provide reasons for those decisions, for decisions to those who submitted objections, and to also provide reasons for such. So just to indicate, you know, buttressing the openness and transparency of ward delimitation and outer boundary changes that the authority would undertake. Clause 47 of the bill provides, and this is a chapter on its own, provides for municipal capacity assessments. And we indicate there that The authority must also provide assistance and guidance to the minister in the MEC regarding the assignment of functions and powers, as well as render an advisory service. We've also made specific reference in the bill, cross-referencing to Chapter 5 of the Structures Act, so the entire Chapter 5 of the Structures Act, as well as to Sections 9 and 10 of the Systems Act, which deals with this matter relating to functions and powers. And we also say in the bill that the authority must conduct at least one capacity assessment in respect of each municipality during a term of municipal councils. But resources depending, it may also undertake a midterm capacity assessment review. Importantly, and now this is also aligning to the term of the board that we would have in place and the incoming board, for the authority to complete at least 6 months before the end of term of the council, the capacity and assessment, which would be handed over to the incoming board. So that incoming board would have in its possession a capacity assessment of all of the municipalities in the country to assist them to undertake the outer boundary assessment process, which would then lead into the changes of inner boundaries, ward boundaries of municipalities. So when we look at section 50, we talk about the amendment of laws. So sections 2, 3, and 4 of the Structures Act will be repealed through this legislation. Sections 2, 3, and 4 deals with the types of municipalities that we have. And then items 2 to 5 of Schedule 1 of the Structures Act deals with delimitation criteria. And then lastly, we say that this is then called the Municipal Demarcations Authority Act. This slide here basically gives a very high level overview of the objects of demarcation, criteria that must be used, determination or redetermination of boundaries, how it is initiated, notification that the board would give, the conducting of investigations. So this would happen after receiving inputs. An investigation must be instituted. The public participation and consultation required around determination or the redetermination of municipal boundaries, which is replicated when it comes to the delimitation of wards. We indicate here the criteria that must be used, which is aligned to what is presently in the Structures Act. And then the deviation in very exceptional circumstances of 30% that the board could look at. And then lastly, on the slide, we also provide for the establishment of a demarcations appeals authority in sections 38 to 46 of the bill, which consists of 3 to 10 persons. And this intervention, Honorable Chair and members, was to ensure that there is a mechanism in place for dispute resolution to deal with persons, with aggrieved persons, around demarcation as well as around delimitation issues, so that we have, you know, some kind of mechanism that is not expensive, that the expensive route of going to court, you know, is circumvented by providing for such an appeals authority. The next slide deals with now very many concurrent processes that would need to be taken at the time of operationalization of the legislation. So at the center of it, we have the term of municipal councils. So presently, the term starting from the 1st of November, 5 years, and the outer date of possible elections would be the 31st of January, 2027. So that includes the 5 years plus the 90 days window that is provided for in the legislation. And then on the right of that, we see the next term commencing possibly if the last date is used as it was used in the present term that we have, of 1st of February 2027 going up into March of 2032. So all these dates have just been indicated for illustration as to what needs to happen at the time that the legislation is operationalized. So when we look at municipal capacity assessments, for example, it should be completed 6 months before the end of the term. And immediately, you know, or at the same times or thereabouts, a process of establishing the first IMDA board would begin, and it would go 6 months into the term of local government starting the 1st of February 2027. And as you would see after that, the midterm capacity assessment of the board would commence from the 1st of February 2028 and completed within 6 months, as we've indicated in the legislation. If we go to the top of that graphic, we see that the IMDA bill introduced into Parliament, well, we were hoping that it would happen by the 1st of April 2022. Been pushed out, and that has happened in June of this year. The act being operationalized, not 2023, but with the hope that it could happen by 2024, because at that time, ward delimitation would need to commence. And having regard at the bottom of that same graphic that our next national and provincial elections would take place around May 2024 or thereabouts. Going into the period thereafter would be ward delimitation finalized and preparations for the next local government elections of 2026-2027. But importantly for the board, Honorable Chair and members, is that so the present board was established in March of 2019 or appointed, and their 5-year term would end on the 29th of February 2024. So the board that would be appointed thereafter, and if, you know, it is accepted that the proposals that the board that would be established would need to take place not later than 6 months into the next term, the board that would be appointed immediately after the one that we have presently perhaps serve a term of 22 months to give time for the next board to be established going into the next term of local government. Honorable Chair, this slide gives a very high level summary of the issues that are provided for in the bill. The pertinent ones that have major impact or perhaps very, very different from what we have in the present legislation, and to go through some of them to indicate that or to reemphasize that, you know, the bill or the naming of the bill aligns now with the provisions in the Constitution. We have an authority as opposed to just the demarcation board, and the authority is made up of the board and the administration. Importantly, and to ensure that we have a single authority dealing with both outer boundary changes as well as board delimitation, we've aligned the term of the board with that of the term of municipal councils. Importantly, we've included as a factor that must be considered is the views of the people and communities living in the area that is subject to demarcation. And we've indicated demarcation to include both determination of outer boundaries as well as ward delimitation. Major redeterminations, which we've defined to take place after every 10 years. and that no changes to boundaries would take place after the minister publishes the formulae for the number of councillors. So public consultation for determination or redetermination of a municipal boundary, there needs to be a report from an investigating committee shared prior to community engagements, and the authority may also engage with other interested parties. May not deviate by more than 30% of the norm, but could only take place under exceptional circumstances. And one of the requirements would require the board to also undertake a further publication of that deviation in the Gazette for comments. The establishment of the demarcation appeal authority, and then the other important matter around the provision or the requirement of municipal capacity assessments to assist the minister and the MEC, as well as other line function ministers, around the performance of the big four functions of potable water, bulk supply of electricity, domestic water, and municipal health services. So, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the committee to note the repeal of the Municipal Demarcation Act of 27 of 1998, and then the proposed provisions as contained in the bill that we've shared as introduced into Parliament. I've just included this last slide, which was not in the presentation version, Honorable Chair, that was shared with the members. So this slide includes the 24 pages of the bill. That which you see in highlighted in green is what is in the present legislation that we have. So all that which is not highlighted, where you just see the text, is basically new additions or introductions that is in the legislation, just emphasizing the need that it needed to be a repeal and replace rather than an amendment bill that would have been introduced into Parliament to deal with the matter around the demarcation bill. So thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the attention. And that is the presentation from ourselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Naidu. I assume I've just received a message that the minister, in fact, when I started the meeting, I heard the minister is in. I think there was some breakdown of communication. I'm informed the minister would join another meeting at 10. Minister, if you have anything you want to say before you leave.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee. No, I don't have anything to add. Thank you very much, and thanks for your understanding. Yes, I will leave at 10 because I have to brief the portfolio committee, the NCOP, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, I think let's take the opportunity and allow you, if there are any questions you would want to raise before 10. I'm not saying it will help us if we raise questions now and use this opportunity. Questions for clarity, any questions in relation to the process, whatever that has been presented. Can I take hands? I see Honorable Brink. For now, I see that hand. Oh, Honorable Direko, Honorable Mpumza, and Honorable Eza. Can I take those, Honorable Brink?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation by Dr. Naidu. This committee has dealt with a number of instances of so-called unviable municipalities, or dysfunctional municipalities rather, but they're often classified as not being viable, being merged with municipalities that are viable and functional. And the result is what is now determined an unviable and dysfunctional municipality. And the examples are numerous. I can refer to the instance of the J.B. Marks municipality, where the former Clockwe was, in fact, a reasonably well-performing municipality. And after it was merged with Ventersdorp, it created one dysfunctional municipality now known as J.B. Marks. The records will show that indeed it is dysfunctional in terms of revenue collection, expenditure, budgeting, and all of the other measures that this committee looks at objectively to make that determination. So it is clear that in the past, the Municipal Demarcation Board has underestimated two factors in particular. Dr. Naidu, perhaps you will agree with me, and they are, firstly, the higher salaries, wages, and benefits that are paid to officials once a merger occurs, either because the category of the municipality changes or because there was a disparity in salaries, wages, and benefits, and those officials who had fewer benefits now have to have more benefits to bring them in line, to level up, so to say. And that has got devastating effects in many instances, with little support coming from National Treasury. The second issue is the extent to which mergers in particular cause institutional disruption, just a mismatch of policies and so forth. The span of control of management increases significantly, and neither of the institutions, or none of the institutions that now form part of the merger, have the capacity to deal with that increased span of control. Now, Dr. Naidu, I've noted the point about the 10-year limit on major reviews, and that's welcome. But what other provisions should we look for in this bill that will prevent or act as a bulwark against the mistakes that I've just mentioned being made? Then, Chairperson, on specific provisions in the bill, I just want to understand one additional point has been added in Section 23.1e, Section 23.1e of the bill, in determining and redetermining municipal boundaries, what the objectives should be. And that provision reads as follows, roughly, according to my notes: the municipality must have the capacity to execute any other functions in line with the minister or the MEC's allocated powers and functions in terms of the Structures Act. I just want to understand, why would the capacity of the municipality be assessed based on the minister or the MEC's allocated powers? So if you just read that section 23.1e, I'm not sure if it's badly phrased or if I am reading it badly, but I don't understand why that should be the case. The second question, section 23 sub 2, again, under the objectives that should be reached by determinations and redeterminations, the additional point has been included that there should be an endeavor to attain the principles of spatial justice, spatial sustainability, resilience, and so forth in terms of SPLUMA, which are, as mentioned here, fairly broad concepts. And I would just want to know from Dr. Naidu whether he is assured that on that reading that a demarcation authority would know what the intention is of the legislation. My fear is perhaps that these concepts are too broad, but perhaps I am mistaken, and perhaps Dr. Naidu can refer us to more specific provisions in SPLUMA that will tell such a demarcation authority exactly what the legislative intent was by adding that additional point. Chairperson, then section 24 of the bill adds a number of additional factors that have to be taken into account by the demarcation and redemarcation authority in making its decisions. One that I have, the first that I've noticed is section 24 sub M, and that is the need for common geostatistical building blocks which support standard geographical hierarchy. I checked the bill and its definitions for the meaning of common geostatistical building blocks. It is not a term that I am familiar with or that I have encountered in any other legislation. And because of that fact, I thought that this is a concept that ought to have been defined. I also can't figure out the dictionary definition of common geostatistical building blocks. It's very, very jargon-like. And I would just want to know, what does this mean? And why hasn't it been defined for ordinary people reading the draft legislation? Then section 24 sub N, November, it says factors that have to be considered in addition, relevant national development policies and plans which might impact on the nature of local government and its boundaries. Once again, this is an incredibly broad and somewhat vague consideration that now has to be taken into account. And perhaps Dr. Naidu can explain to us that what is the policy purpose that this addition seeks to achieve, section 24 sub N. Then the last one of the additional factors and section 24 of the bill, relevant national and provincial policies and legislation relating to the reorganization of local government. So once again, very broad. Does this mean that if the national provincial government has a policy, that this now becomes a factor in determining the boundaries of municipalities, which has, in essence, a constitutional impact? And the obvious concern here would be that this provision would be used to undermine local authorities who adopt policies that aren't completely in line with national and provincial government. In other words, local authorities that exercise their constitutional autonomy. And I would very much like the comment on that. Then, Chairperson, these regular assessments of capacity that have to be done. I understand that at critical intervals, the old demarcation board, in terms of the provisions of the Structures Act, had to do these determinations. But now the difference seems to be, if I understand correctly, and again, I'm open to being corrected, now they have to be done regularly. Are we assured that the demarcation authority has the capacity to do these regular capacity assessments? And do they know where to start and where to end and what criteria to apply? You know, simply referring to the existing provisions in the Structures Act, sorry, not the Systems Act, the Structures Act is one thing. But we also have to admit that the Demarcation Board has been particularly poor in its assessment of the capacity of newly formed municipalities to fulfill all sorts of functions. And I did mention the example of J.B. Marks, but there are other examples as well. Morimole Mokopong, for example, in Limpopo as well. Chairperson, then lastly, there are three omissions in the new bill when compared to the Municipal Demarcation Act as it currently exists. The first omission is, and here I will refer to the old provision or the existing provision in the Act, section 13 sub 3b, where if a member of the Municipal Demarcation Board is elected to a party political position or office, he will automatically cease being, or she would automatically cease being a member of the Municipal Demarcation Board. So although there is a prohibition on in the bill on members of the authority serving in party political positions, which we welcome, there is no automatic mechanism that triggers the removal or the deemed to bring about the deemed resignation of such a member if subsequent to their appointment to the authority, they are then elected to a party political office. Why has that been omitted? And here, Chairperson, I must refer to the current situation where we have the chairperson of the Municipal Demarcation Board, Mr. Thabo Manyoni, who is running as the provincial chairperson of the ANC in the Free State, which I think does enormous harm to the credibility and integrity of the Demarcation Board. But be that as it may, the second omission is in terms of the old Act, section 5 sub 2, there was a prohibition on the board borrowing money. No such prohibition is contained in the new legislation, unless I'm missing it. And then lastly, in the old Act or the current Act, section 6 sub 3b, said that the composition of the board must reflect regional diversity, which basically means that the provinces and must be fairly equitably represented, I can imagine. But I don't see that, or a similar provision in the new legislation. I have other questions, Chairperson, as well, but I'm mindful of time, and so I look forward to the answers. Thank you.
Ecco. Honorable Direct.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to all the members and everyone who's present in the meeting. Chair, we've been having some community protests regarding the demarcation processes. And in other instances, we had a situation that some of the municipalities were dysfunctional, were clubbed together. And as a result, they ended up being more dysfunctional. So I would like to check with the department as to how is the bill going to assist us to resolve the current demarcation challenges and what is expected from the local, provincial, and national government in order to make the bill successful. Secondly, Chair, what informs the proposed change of Municipal Demarcation Board to an independent municipal demarcation authority? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mbumza.
thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members and the minister. Chair, let's welcome the presentation of the amendment of this this bill, the Independent Municipal Demarcation Bill. Initially, I was questioning myself, why now independent? Now I understand that the amendment is aligning itself with the constitutional instruction of an independent board. Chair, mine is that it will appear to be happening on one point, that indeed, currently the board is has undertaken to publish people to make submissions on determination of outer boundaries. And a number of communities have been protesting since the establishment of municipalities, wherein some municipalities would be demarcated within outside their own town into another town in the rural settings and create problems where people had to travel from their own villages across their own town into another municipality, which to some extent negates some of the objectives set out that when you demarcate, we have to look at the access to services and all those other matters. But my, nonetheless, Chair, my point is that the vision of the white paper of a viable ideal municipality was a municipality that was to be in a position to raise its own revenue to the extent that the municipality would be able to rake almost 90% of its own revenue and to build its own economy. But that vision, given the geographic nature and the rarity of some of municipalities in the country, could not land into the objective reality would be the opposite, where we'd get a number of these municipalities being relying on the national grant because there are no economies and nothing, no revenue at all. Now, the question, my question then is therefore that this major redetermination after 10 years, does it relate to the fact that we will not tamper with stability and the capacity building of a redetermined outer boundary municipality for a period of 10 years? And then we'll be in a position to build that capacity and create a stability, because this redetermination of outer boundaries within 5 years has not assisted the process of building stable developmental municipalities. Does it go along with this assessment that this mid-year assessment that will be conducted within 5 years and within even that period of 5 years would not lead to assigning powers and functions within the tier municipalities, and in the end, impacting negatively on stability and the capacity building within that particular municipality? If that would be the case, I would be happy, Chair, but otherwise, if it is not, then would never come out of a situation where some municipalities would remain dysfunctional because there is no spatial economic justice within its jurisdictional boundaries because of the nature of the fact that they are small towns, and then therefore, because such small towns, there is no viable economic activity. They would never change other than pumping economic development into those institutions. I was saying then, therefore, I'd be happy that that if this amendment of a major determination within 10 years would be accompanied by providing stability and capacity building informed by these mid-year assessments. Chair, in terms of Section 63B, of the current Municipal Demarcation Act, it provides that the composition of the Municipal Demarcation Board would have to reflect a regional print. Now, in the current proposed bill, such regional diversity is not accommodated for. Is it deliberate or is it by omission? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Tsa,
no, thank you, Chair. Mine is just a very brief. I am covered mostly by honorable members and honorable Mbunza when he spoke about rural development, because I'm quite passionate about that state, because the development, Chair, of rural municipalities, and let alone that we have, I have raised a number of times that in the Eastern Cape, there is a municipality there that is stretches all the way to Aberdeen, wherein a councillor cannot be able to cover the entire area in terms of providing the services, and let alone, Chair, to speak to and hear the outcries of the people in terms of these demarcations. How is the bill, Chair, going to, because the Auditor General in 2021 reports, financial reports, says that the 62 municipalities that have submitted credible financial statements, and that illustrates the state of dysfunctionality of municipalities. Now, let alone rural municipalities where they are heavily reliant on the grants of from national treasure. How is it going to change that situation of those municipalities to enable the communities that are delimited and demarcated within this proposed bill find expression of their own grievances in terms of services that should be delivered to them? That's one, Chair. I know that Spluma does talk about the representation of the gender parity in terms of the composition of the municipal demarcation board. I just want to know, because section 9.1, subsection 9 of the bill introduces changes pertaining to the composition of the panel. I want to get an understanding, Chair, whether that panel will constitute the representation of women in terms of what then needs to happen in terms of composing that municipality. And I'm sorry, the panel, Chair, sorry about that. Then in section 6.2 of the bill, I just wanted to ask, Chair, whether risk management will be taken to ensure that political party capture of the administration who makes appointment of the board members is not based on political affiliation, but rather merit-based appointments. How is the bill seeking to achieve this, Chair? Then I just wanted to just get a clarity on what is entailed in section 7. It says that the minister should determine the number of members of the board. What is the criteria that the minister is using there in terms of that section? I think those are my questions, Chair, for now. And yeah, those are my questions for now, Chair. Then, oh yes, municipal capacity has been covered. I won't regurgitate those things. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Utelezi.
Thank you, Chair. In relation to the functions of the authority, as set out in Chapter 2, Section 5C, in relation to rendering an advisory service, will the authority follow up on the implementation of the advisory reports? And how will the bill mandate that proof of implementation is provided to the authority? My next question, Chair, is in relation to the functions of the authority as set out in Chapter 2, Section 5D, in the matter of conducting municipal capacity assessments, how often will these assessments be conducted, and how will the bill mandate the frequency of municipal capacity assessments? My next one, Chair, is in relation to the rules of procedure as set out in Chapter 2, Section 15B, in the matter of keeping minutes of proceedings and decisions. Will these be made available for public records? And if not, how will the board be held accountable? The last one is in relation to the delegation of and instruction to exercise powers and perform functions by the board as set out in Chapter 2, Section 17A, subsection 17A, in the matter of the board delegating any of its powers to an employee, how will the access, especially to financial records that accompanies the position of board membership, be regulated? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mkhalipi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think members have covered me on the points that I wanted to raise, Chair. Nevertheless, I still want to understand the proposed independent municipal demarcation authority. And I think in one of the proposed sections on the bill, it also refers to the minister being appointing a number of members to become the board members. So I just want to understand the independency, if the minister is also going to be empowered by the act to appoint the bill. That is one. And how far does the proposed bill go as regards to the independency? I'm saying this, for instance, now, the chairperson of the board, we know very well, he used to be a member of parliament belonging to a political party, and he is a current chairperson now. And if he qualifies also to be at the chairperson, does that mean that he won't be qualifying to become the chair because he belongs to a political party? So how is this, can you be unpacked, this issue of independence or independent municipal demarcation authority rather? What does it entail? Because we know very well in South Africa, there's nothing that is independent. That is the fact of the matter. So the second issue, Chair, one of the really concern that we used to raise in terms of the demarcation board when they come here to this committee is that they don't have resources. Does the bill going to address the issue of resources? As a result, when they have to go and do their work, firstly, they don't have offices in local municipalities. So they ended up using the councillors, the mayors, and depending on the those people at a local level. So at some point, we had some serious concern when they were engaging with us on the committee and said, look, we ended up using the mayor's speaker's office to go and call people whenever we have to take a decision in terms of the demarcation. So does this bill going to address that particular concern? Because if the bill does not address those particular concerns that were raised, it means that we are still going to be having the same challenges, because our fundamentally challenges and concerns as the committee was to say that you can't have a demarcation board that is going to take a decision on how people must be demarcated. But at the end of the day, those people who are being called to come and do submissions, they must be called by the municipality. So it goes back to my earlier point of independence. Because if a mayor, let me make an example with the mayor of Pokwan. I don't know if there's mayor in Pokwan now since there was taking out of government and so on. So let's say a mayor of Pokwane is a DA member. And then there is the one now who's supposed to call the public. Surely people on the ground, because people, they belong to difficult political parties. Once they know, this thing is called by the mayor, who it belongs to DA or ANC or EFF, the negative attitude starts to people to say, no, we're not going to go there. Whether the meeting is not called by the mayor to be addressed by the mayor of a political party, whether the meeting is called by the office of the speaker who happened to belong to a political party, but the demarcation board wants to address the community and engage with the community and have a say as a community to say that this is a new proposed demarcation, what is your say? Those people, they are not going to attend that meeting. And then they'll be affected like that. And the chair of the board will also agree with me that on a number of occasions, I do have such problems whereby people are saying, no, this demarcation is also not correct, because you find in a certain area, we are divided into three wards. So those decisions have been taken. And as far as I remember, Chair, when we engage with the demarcation board here, we ask them, you guys, when you need to go and address those things after the decision have taken, you are telling us that you don't have powers to go and rechange what has been demarcated already. So those are the issues that we want to understand. If this proposed bill, which will become the law, is going to address those particular issues. Because my understanding, Chair, is that each and every law must have solutions to the problem that is faced by the people on the ground. So it will be a useless law if those concerns, as a result, what Honorable Derego was saying, people will be up in arms when you're going to elections. People will be saying that, no, I'm not going to vote because I don't want to belong to this particular demarcation. I want to belong to this demarcation. So it's useless if the law can't address what the society is going through. So if we can be assisted to unpack all those challenges, we'll be very happy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. That's it. But in terms of checking the responses, I know the minister said he will not be there at this time. I have not checked whether he's still there or not. But let's allow the department, let me say, led by the minister, to respond to the issues, whether it's Dr. Naidu now who is here. I think let's respond.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So at the beginning of my presentation, I indicated that provisions that find itself in the bill has been informed by, inputs from various stakeholders, but key amongst them were inputs that have been made by the previous and present boards. So as part of apportioning the responses required, Honorable Chair, I'm going to ask the acting CEO of the demarcation board to respond to the issues around regional diversity, the matter around SPLUMA, which is in clause 23.2 of the bill, the factors to be considered in respect of clauses 24M to O, but actually 24M to P were factors that were sponsored entirely by the board. But as well as to then deal with the matters that were raised by Honorable Buthelezi, specifically the governance matters relating to the rules of procedure by the board, as well as delegations that the board may provide to its staff. So to go to the matters raised by the honorable members, and to start with Honorable Brink and the the matter around amalgamation of, you know, unviable plus viable municipalities and the consequences of higher salaries being paid. So let me first say that, you know, when the intention or as a conclusion of amalgamating three municipalities. Now remember, this is an entirely MDB process. So if one looks at the processes that were followed in preparation for the 2016 elections, those determinations that had taken place then, that was a bottom-up approach. Where provinces had made representations to the department in terms of what proposals could be considered, which were submitted to the demarcation board. And eventually, the redetermination of boundaries had been taken by the board, whether it was the amalgamation of two municipalities to form one, or in certain instances, the amalgamation of three municipalities to form one municipality. Now, key to that entire process is, so once, you know, such a process is undertaken, a transition-related process also needs to be taken. And when you look at the legislation that deals with this, so Section 12 is clear, in that MECs establish municipalities. So, having regard to what would be determined by the board, together with what the responsibility of provinces should be, should result in a municipality having considered all of the factors that the board would need to apply to determine such a municipality. But when you look at the amalgamation of three, for example, from the three top structures of those municipalities, you ought to have been getting the best MM, the best municipal manager through that amalgamation. You ought to have been getting the best CFO coming from the amalgamation of the three. And then the Section 56 that you would have ought to be representing the best of the three that would have come to in terms of being appointed in the newly established entity. Whether that happens is a matter for debate. But the thing is, the matter raised by Honorable Brink is the inflated salaries that you would have as a result of the amalgamation. And that is as a result of the grading that we would need to be cognizant of, and which grading includes the factors around municipal income, the number of people that are living in the area. And as those would now obviously increase by an amalgamation, the sum total of those factors would increase, and therefore it would have the consequence of higher salaries being paid. Needless to say, and I think the evidence is there that institutional disruption does take place. Managing a transition, be it in the private sector, be it in the public sector, be it in the municipal level, is something that requires very, very careful management. And if it is not managed, you know, carefully, you're gonna have, without doubt, disruption, and you know, which could lead to instability in various areas in the administration, which impacts perhaps into the political interface as well. So transition, you know, is a matter that needs to be very, very carefully managed. A lot of emotions at play, etc. So that which then leads to perhaps the provision where we now have included that says, and a matter that has been raised by Honorable Brink as well, that, you know, the 10 years inclusion is welcome, but it has been informed in the main by the disruption that has been caused by managing these processes post an amalgamation or redetermination into a much larger municipal area. The issue around section or clause 23E and the division of powers and functions, and that which states that the authority must endeavor to attain, is it 23E, the capacity to execute any other function in line with the ministers and the MECs, allocated powers and functions in accordance with the Structures Act. So presently, the division or the adjustment of powers and functions is informed by what the Demarcation Board has recommended. And we're saying that going into the future, if the powers and functions of a municipality are adjusted, this must be considered when the authority does make a determination or redetermines a municipal boundary, in addition to the objectives that it must bear in mind, which are aligned to that which is provided for in the Constitution. I've asked or requested that the board, the acting CEO, deal with the matters raised around the SPLUMA alignment, as well as the additional functions that have been provided for in clause 24. But the question is whether the board knows what criteria to apply when it comes to conducting municipal capacity assessments. So perhaps firstly to indicate or respond to the regularity thereof, which has been raised by not Honorable Brink, but I think by one or two other members as well. So we indicate that in the bill, the board must undertake at least one municipal capacity assessment during a term of a local government term. But we also say that the resources dependent that the authority may also undertake another. Now, this is an important link in the entire value chain of determining or redetermining municipal boundary, because it must be taken into account as the legislation provides presently when the board determines or redetermines municipal boundaries. Now, over the years, and when one goes back to the very, very early boards that we had in place, capacity assessments were something that many stakeholders relied on heavily, be it provinces, be it other institutions, be it StatsSA, et cetera, to inform, you know, the determination of how boundaries were informed, that were determined by the board. But it also gave an indication as to what staff numbers were in place to deliver on specific functions. So when you look at the very early capacity assessments that were undertaken by the board, you would see staff being, you know, identified, numbers counted, et cetera, for each and every function that a municipality was responsible for performing. So even at some stage, you would have the board identifying or unpacking what each of the 38 powers and functions that a municipality ought to perform, and in terms of what is expected of it. So there's been various iterations of capacity assessments that the board have undertaken, various methodologies used, at some points in time, and I do not want to speak for the board, but different levels of responses that would be coming from municipalities in terms of the work that they would undertake in that regard. I think we can use this process to also see what we can provide for in the bill that would assist the board in identifying criteria or making it mandatory for what criteria the board should be using when it does come to undertaking capacity assessment. So that's a specific proposal around capacity assessment, but I think it should be also a general request across all provisions in the bill. And this would be what the process is that we are embarking upon now and initiating through Parliament, is to see how we come out with a piece of legislation that's going to be there for a very, very long time to assist us and to sharpen the way we deal with boundary demarcation, be it outer boundaries of municipalities, as well as the inner boundaries. And I think if we do it like that, Honorable Nkalipi, you know, we will be addressing the challenges that prevail. And it does become, you know, a useful piece of legislation that helps us to deal with the various challenges that emanate from matters relating to demarcation. Honorable Brink, we do note the omissions that you have raised around the triggers for resignation of public office bearers. And perhaps the thinking at the time of drafting was that because we disallow persons holding political office from becoming board members, it implied that we would not have a board member that would be becoming a member of a political party. But I think, you know, if we need to then provide for certainty to bring back that clause, I think it is something that, you know, we could certainly look at. In relation to 5.2, I'm just trying to see exactly what the provision deals with. Maybe I've just jotted it down incorrectly, and perhaps it is 25.
Prohibition of borrowing money.
Oh, okay. Yes. So even that, I think, when I recall from our discussions, Honorable Brink, I think the present provisions in the legislation, be it the PFMA in the main, outlaws it. And therefore, it was felt, you know, superfluous to have it in the bill as well. But if that is not the case, I mean, it is certainly something that we will include as part of strengthening the governance matters relating to the board. I've asked a colleague, Mr. Ramagadza, to deal with the issue of reflecting regional diversity. And I think matters that inform this provision or lack thereof was an understanding or a perception that the board must have a representative from each and every province. So 9 provinces, and so each province being represented, which really impacted on, as far as I know, trying to get a board that reflected the requirements and the diverse requirements that we find in the legislation, as opposed to getting a representative from each of the provinces. So if that was the case, you probably would not have been getting a more diverse set of skills represented in the board. But Mr. Ramagadza can just also perhaps deal with that as well. Honorable Direko raised the issue of community protests. And perhaps to say that, you know, you're probably not gonna get everybody in a community that may be entirely satisfied with an outcome. But perhaps And perhaps this could be because communities have been split. Community protests are also as a result of perhaps poor service delivery in specific areas. And whether demarcation is going to be a solution to it, I doubt it. But if you have a community protest arising out of a result of a split community, we're hoping that through the, you know, the proposal around the 30% deviation in respect of the norm, that could assist in keeping communities together. And perhaps through that, that would limit community protests if communities were indeed aggrieved by being split as a consequence of trying to maintain a strict adherence to the 15% norm that we have presently. Why, IMDA, why the Independent Municipal Demarcation Authority naming of the legislation and not maintaining Municipal Demarcation Board? I think the case was made for it when we indicated the alignment that we find with Section 155 of the Constitution. But I think it was also responded to quite well by Honorable Mpumza when he indicated that, you know, he had this discomfort, if I can use those words in inverted commas, but saw it, saw the light of it in terms of it now being aligned with the constitutional instruction as provided for in the legislation. Honorable Mpumza also raised the matter around major redeterminations taking place every 10 years. And as I've indicated, honorable members, you know, this is as a consequence of trying to minimize disruption and to ensure that we have stability. So major also being very, very limiting in terms of how far a board, the board can go. So even if a single ward is under discussion in terms of being moved from one municipality to the other, I mean, it needs to be done after every 10 years. So a really, really, you know, strict kind of condition as to when major redeterminations do take place. The issue around the municipal capacity assessments, I've spoken to it a little already, but, you know, we feel that we need to see how we get this matter high up on the agenda again. As I've indicated previously, you know, it was an assessment that the board had undertaken that was relied upon by various stakeholders to inform the work that they would do. And we believe that we need to see how we get this back high up on the agenda. So I believe we can co-create the conditions that would need to be looked at, the criteria that the board needs to consider that would inform this capacity assessment that they must take within the five-year term, but also undertake a midterm assessment during that five-year term of councils to see where the municipalities are improving, regressing, et cetera, et cetera. Honorable Treza raises the issue of the composition of the panel and the inclusion of women on it, if not the panel, also the board members itself. So the panel is a panel that would be chaired by the Chief Justice or the person appointed by the Chief Justice. Excuse me. And as far as I can recall, the provisions say that the board must, or the panel must develop their own processes and operation rules, guidance, guiding documents, etc., etc. But it is an entirely panel matter as to how it is established, as well as how board members are appointed. How will risk management and politics be managed and composition of the board? I think the intervention by now excluding persons that hold political office to not be considered for being appointed to the board would assist. And, you know, we do hope that we have a board that does not, that looks at the factors that must be considered when looking at the demarcation of boundaries, be it outside or internal, and that it is that it does not become party political. The issue around determining the number of members by the minister, I looked at the provision and it just says in section 7 that, and that's the section, the clause that was referenced by Honorable Tessa, that it says that the board consists of no fewer than 7 and no more than 10, and that it must reflect the broad composition of the South African society and the collectively represent a pool of knowledge concerning issues relevant to demarcation. I think I may have missed the section that the Honorable Member was referring to. And if I have, maybe my colleagues that have been also taking notes, Mr. Nkeshli can come in and respond to that specific matter raised by Honorable Tessa. Honorable Buthelezi, I have referred the matters that you've raised to the acting CEO of the Demarcation Board. And I think I have also indirectly also responded to your question around how often will municipal capacity assessments take place. I think I have responded to that already. Honorable Nkalipi raises the issue of the minister appointing the board members. The legislation is quite clear, both presently and in the bill, that there is a selection panel that is appointed that undertakes the process of appointing the board. So providing selection, identification of the board members, but ultimately appointed by the president. Also raised the issue of how far does independence go. And I've indicated that we've tried to attend to the matter by excluding persons that hold political office from becoming members. And we hope that this will go a long way in terms of ensuring that we do not have persons holding political office as members of the board. The matter around the lack of resources of the board was raised as well, which has not allowed the board to, the present board to undertake a kind of decentralized model of having provincial offices. And as it has been indicated in the past, it was because of a lack of resources, financial resources in the main. And simply put, you know, I think this is a national treasury process, a funding matter. And, you know, if on review by the national treasury, resources do become available, and a case being made by the board, you know, for provincialization, I think that could be a matter that the national treasury would want again consider. Honorable Chair, that's as far as I could pick up on issues that were raised by honorable members. If I have omitted anything, I do apologize. But let me ask Mr. Nkeshli from my team to respond to any issues that I may have omitted, and then through you, Honorable Chair, hand over to Mr. Ramagadza, the acting CEO of the board, to respond to those specific issues. And perhaps lastly, if the Chief State Law Advisor wants to add anything from a drafting perspective, could also be given the opportunity. But thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for your attention. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's follow that order then, as suggested.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And Dr. Naidu, I think there's only one that has been omitted from my side, from Honorable Tereza, whereby was asking the question if whether the bill accommodates a situation whereby a municipality has got a geographical size that is much wider and makes it difficult for councillors to travel from distance. What I want to highlight is that that is covered in the Structures Amendment Act 2021. And if you look at Section 7, amending Section 20 of that Act, it now permits the MEC to deviate by 20% in the cases where the geographical size of the local municipality is greater than 20,000 square kilometers, and if less than 35 councillors have been determined for the municipality in terms of the formula. So that was done merely to address that, Honorable Chair, because if you look at the direct Kruger municipality in the Northern Cape, the Gauteng province can fit the geographical 3 times. So that's why that deviation now, as compared to the previous deviation by the MECs, was permitted. Of course, the MEC can do that in consultation with or in concurrence with the minister. Thank you.
Okay, the next one.
Thank you. Thank you very much, members, chairperson, and all esteemed members of the committee. Yes, I would want to, as indicated by Dr. Naidu, yes, we did make a number of inputs from the demarcation board, obviously out of experience and all that. Let me start with the questions that I think Honorable Brink raised regarding the criteria or the factors that needs to be considered, especially from M, N, O. I'll probably take P and Q as well, just to provide some background. I think, Honorable Brink, you're quite right. Often when people are writing, especially from their own area of work, we tend to forget that we need to communicate to everybody else. However, just to clarify, I don't have a problem if the department could be able to define that common geostatistical building blocks. However, just to clarify why that all this comes from, in South Africa, an example that I could give of that common, what we can maybe say is a common geostatistical building block, it's enumerator areas that the Statistics South Africa use for the census and all the like. So those are some of the things that we have at the moment. I think, but also there are many other in the development area, there are many other building blocks that people may want to use. But the one that I think most of us will be familiar with, it's more the enumerator areas, because that against those geographic spaces, you are able to get statistics aligned to them so that you do your proper calculations when you are doing municipal boundary redeterminations. And as you can see that as it goes towards the end, where it says for which facilitate and support a standard geographical hierarchy, it's pretty much if we play our system correctly, we may use, for example, enumerator area. There's been a lot of questions previously about why, for example, you rely more on registered voters in some instances, but this and not population. But for municipal boundary redetermination process, we rely mainly on population. And it's always very better if you have, let me call them geographical spaces that from which you can be able to align statistical information, demographics, and all that, that you can do better analysis. It really comes from that. But I don't want to say that it cannot be defined better so that there's no confusion in that regard. Then the next one, which relevant national development policies and plans which might impact on the nature of local government. The idea here, again, yes, I agree with you that these are very broad. And generally, if you check even those that are existing, some of them are very general. But operationally or practically, what we do as the demarcation board, we have gone a step further to understand each one of them. We have developed indicators that are very broad and minute to very specific things that we need to look at with regard to each one of them. And I think the department here was trying to at least cover the idea that at national government and sometimes at provincial government and even at local government from time to time, there might be policies that may have an influence on the spatial makeup of the areas, which the board will have to consider. But considering doesn't necessarily mean that you have to follow, but at least we need to look at those things so that we do not find boundaries that are going against what government is looking to achieve in a long term or medium term. So that's the idea around making sure that the MDB is one of the factors in determining municipal boundaries. We look at relevant national development policies and plans that might be there. For example, at local government, you'll have special development plans, national and provincial. Some of them would have provincial development frameworks and plans and growth and development plans that are from time to time put in place. So this was an effort to make sure that those things are not ignored as part of demarcation process, because you may define municipalities that goes against the vision of government as a whole, or even a state as a whole, if you are not cognizant of some of those things. And that relates to O as well. And with regards to P, it's very important because areas are not the same. I've heard members indicating that we need ultimately to determine municipalities that have got revenue base and all the like. But it's a fact that areas in South Africa are different out of the history that we come from. But it's important to look at the natural endowments that each and every area might have, so that we can be able to determine whether an area has got a chance to have a proper revenue base, either in the future or in the short term, and also look at whether those are being exploited to an extent that a municipality could be able to survive out of those. So yeah, so that's our thinking around those. But I acknowledge the fact that yes, they are very broad to an extent that when you're putting together a legislation like this, if you were to go specific on each one of them, the law or the act might end up very long. But like I said, what we do, we break down each and every one of these and we develop sub-indicators that we use to as we analyze the different areas that we have in the country. And then with members also raised a number of issues about community protests. I think Member Direko raised it as well. Member Mkalipi raised it as well. Yes, it is a concern, but the question was, what's in this bill, as Dr. Naidu has indicated, what's in this bill that will at least try and solve some of those challenges? You would realize that in the current legislation, issues of public participation are not explicit. They are there, but they're not explicit enough. For in this particular bill, I think it's section 29, it tries to elevate issues of public participation and consultation on how those should be done. And it becomes very elaborate in terms of what the authority has to do in making sure that people are brought on board and they participate in the process. But also, most importantly, when all is said and done, This particular bill provides the appeals authority. Instead of people going having only an option of going to court, it provides for an appeals authority, which will look at whether the municipal demarcation board followed the process accordingly, and people can appeal, and those things will be looked at again. So that's an endeavor to try and make sure that we minimize the dissatisfaction. It will always be there. I think we always acknowledge the fact that demarcation, where you are moving a boundary from one place to the other, in one way or the other, there will be people who are dissatisfied. But we are trying to do that to make sure that we minimize that as far as possible. And then there was a question about, I think Dr. Naidu touched on it a little bit with regards to whether the Municipal Demarcation Board, I think it was Member Brink who raised it, whether the Municipal Demarcation Board has got capacity to do municipal capacity assessments in these intervals that are being proposed here. As much as currently we may not have enough financial resources, but the system, as Dr. Naidu has indicated, we think it's very important that it must be elevated to an extent that it becomes more upfront. And the thinking is that if it becomes more upfront, people will use it more often or more regularly, because the information will be there regularly, to an extent that we may even link it, the outcomes thereof, to issues that government does, which are not necessarily part of this particular act. Like, for example, the interventions, Section 139 and all that, where we've always had challenges, especially the provincial government always had challenges when they intervene, where they were supposed to be very specific on what are the issues that they are taking over. So this process can also be brought in to provide the information that may be used for that process. But also, I think it was Member Tessa who raised an issue about whether this is linked to the support and capacity building of municipalities. But he was asking it in the context of the 10-year. Yes, one of the reasons why we want it to be 10 years is because 5 years was not enough to allow a municipality to establish itself and also build its own capacity, but also getting support from provinces and local and national for them to be able to function properly. And as soon as they were just about to be established, a boundary changed again. We thought, no, that cannot be. So we need to have to give them a much longer period to allow for that capacity, and proper analysis will tell whether indeed the issues that are being experienced in those municipalities have got anything to do with boundaries or not. Because what we picked up is that most of the challenges that are experienced at municipal level, including those that are amalgamated, have got very little to do with the boundary or the spatial makeup of the area. However, when people experience those, like governance issues, dysfunctionality, financial mismanagement, and all that, people often think the solution will be to demarcate and amalgamate or de-amalgamate. So what we're saying is people need to systematically work on support and capacity building over a period of time, so that even the board will do the assessment and see if the challenges that are being experienced are spatial in nature, or it's other things that may be taken care of through other processes. And I think Member Buthelezi spoke about the provision that talks about delegation by the board to either members of the staff or employee or committees. With regards to committees, it's standard procedure. I think it's even governed in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, that the records of the different committees of the board are actually treated as those of the board. And in essence, even through our experience, the board actually is even provided for in terms of this bill and even the current legislation. The board cannot delegate at all its decision in as far as it relates to municipal boundary determination or ward delimitation process. Those cannot be delegated. So members can rest assured that the records and as far as it relates to those will always lie within the context of the board processes. In as far as any other function that the board may delegate relates to administrative issues and all that. Those are governed in terms of the processes of the Public Finance Management Act and other governance processes that are there within the state. And the records are kept in that. And the reporting, as you would know, it's in either on a quarterly basis to the relevant committees, for example, the Audit and Risk Committee. Those are reported there, and they are recorded as part of the Audit and Risk Committee all the time and on a quarterly basis. I also want, I think Member Mkhalipi raised the issues of complaints, which is very much aligned to committee protest. But specifically, I think she's worried about after the outcomes, that certain things cannot be changed and all that. And I did allude to the fact that to get around that problem, where after the board has taken final decisions, we always go around and say we can't change our decisions in that way. I think that is taken care of in terms of the appeals authority. I think I'll stop here. I'm not sure if I've missed any that Dr. Naidu has asked me to take care of. Thanks.
Thanks. The last one. I think the legal person if it's still there or there's anything to be added.
Yes, Chair. I will start with the drafting areas for clarity. In terms of the definitions that the Honourable Member indicated, geostatistical building blocks and geographical hierarchy, when we're drafting the ALIF, according to the committee's instructions, we can insert the proposed definitions accordingly. The other issue was clarity around the meaning of functions allocated by the minister and MEC to municipalities, but it wasn't included in there to municipalities. Reference was made to the Structures Act. We can also, when we are formulating the A-list, clean that up so it's very clear as to the intention of that specific provision. Chair, the issue of membership of the board, and I believe Dr. Naidu also touched on this. Current Act Section 13.3b provides more or less that a board member elected to office ceases to be a member. We have attempted to capture this under Clause 9.2 of the bill, which refers to disqualification from being a member or remaining a member. But once again, if this is not too clear, we can be more specific in terms of Section 9.2. Because we say the following persons are disqualified from becoming or remaining a member of the board, and under E, a person holding a political office. So that will cover a member that comes in and is elected as a member, and 6 months down the line, he now holds a political office. In terms of appointment of board members and reference to specific criteria, Clause 10.3 of the bill provides the selection panel may determine its own procedure, including its decision-making procedure, which must be fair and transparent. But this must be read together with qualifications of board members under Section 9.1. A member of the board must be a South African citizen, have the necessary qualifications, experience, or knowledge in relation to. And then we've got sub items A all the way to X, well, the Roman numerals coming in, which specifically states which areas that they need to be or have experience in. And that together with Section 10.1, where the panel makes their own decision-making procedures, that more or less would cover the criteria in terms of appointment of board members. Chair, the current Section 5.2, the board borrowing money, and when I say current Section 5.2, I'm referring to the current Act. We must remember that the Demarcation Board Act was enacted in 1998, and the PFMA came into operation in 1999. So in terms of this bill, we've said under Chair, status of authority, clause 4.
The authority is a constitutional institution listed under Schedule 1 of the PFMA and is subject to the Public Finance Management Act. So the Public Finance Management Act regulates extensively financial matters for constitutional institutions, constitutional entities. The demarcation board is already listed there, but we wanted to formalize it in this legislation. So it was not necessary to pick out specific matters of taking loans, borrowing, because the go-to is the PFMA. However, should the committee wish that we import those provisions into the bill, that can be easily done under the A list.
Chair, the other issue was
one of the honorable member raised the issue of information held by the authority and how this will be accessible to the public. Once again, this act, the Demarcation Board Act, was enacted in 1998. The Promotion of Access to Information Act.
Chair.
Yes, Honorable.
Please, the presenter now, who is just responding. We are noting as members of parliament, each and every clause here, in terms of the preparations that we make, and she's just saying another member. What constitute that kind of attitude? Because we are noting,
Honorable. I think we are noting.
So that we are noting the focus of the responses and the quality of the responses that she's giving us.
Honorable Teza, I didn't take note of what you are saying. If there's such, I think she will correct herself, but let's focus on the issues. I didn't notice what you are saying in terms of attitude. I was also taking notes as she was in reference to that.
Let's try and demand quality, because what we're going to do here, we're not going to sleep and prepare for these issues, and people just come and say that particular member without telling us what is the name of that member.
No. I agree with you, but I'm saying my focus as well was not on, I didn't notice what you are saying, but let's focus on the issues now. I'm saying let that be corrected and let's focus on the issues as she is responding to some of these technical issues that were raised as part of the question. So I'm saying I hear what you are saying. I don't have a problem with that. She also is listening. I think she will correct that. But let's focus on the conduct. Thanks. Can you continue?
Chair, I must apologize to all the honorable members. I didn't mean any disrespect. I do apologize. And this is not the concern of the committee, but on my side, I'm having technical problems because I couldn't access the meeting through my laptop and I'm doing it through my cell phone. So my apologies, members, to all the honorable members for the way I'm reading off my notes. I don't mean any disrespect, and I hope you accept my apology.
Yes, accepted. Let's continue.
Chair, when I stopped at access to information held by the authority, and how this information is going to be made accessible. I've indicated that the current Demarcation Act was enacted in 1998, and the Promotion to Access to Information Act was enacted in 2000, and this regulates, amongst other things, information that's held by public bodies. This is once again extensively regulated. So the default position is that should a person wish to inquire or request information from the authority, it will be done in terms of the procedures of the Promotion to Access to Information Act.
Alternatively, the simplest approach is in our constitution. We have a right to information. So it could be done by way of a simple request. However, if it's more intricate, then the authority will follow the procedures in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. The other issue was the delegation of functions to employees by the authority and the access to financial records. The procedure or the thinking behind this issue is simply that it's an internal procedure for the authority to determine, and it will be based on their security policies. However, once again, if the committee should recognize that this is essential to the legislation under the A list, it can be formalized and included into the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you. I will take hands that want to follow up. I see Honorable Brink. Any further hand? Honorable Brink, can you come in?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I note the answers, especially by Ms. Naidu. I almost forgot her name and almost made myself guilty of what she just apologized for. As well as Mr. Ramagatsa. I just want to ask the following follow-up questions in respect of the factors in the new bill that have to be considered in determining determinations and redeterminations of boundaries. In response to Ms. Naidu, I think the problem with common geostatistical building blocks is that you can, I suppose, define it when we get to the clause by clause process, but surely the purpose of legislation is not to fill in the details as you go along, but to actually understand fundamentally what you are trying to accomplish and what you are writing down fundamentally means. And in this regard, a thank you to Mr. Ramagatsa for his attempted explanation of common geostatistical building blocks. And as an example, he mentioned census enumerator areas or census enumerator boundaries would be an example of a common geostatistical building block. But, you know, in the existing act and under some of the provisions of the bill, the census enumerator boundaries are already a factor to be considered. So section 25 sub G of the existing act says, in order to attain the objective set out in section 24, the board must, when determining a municipal boundary, take into account existing and proposed functional boundaries, including magisterial districts, voting districts, health, transport, police, and censor enumerated boundaries. So why would you then include censor enumerator areas or boundaries as one of the examples of common geostatistical building blocks? And I'm not criticizing Mr. Ramagatsa. I appreciate his answer, and I think it's sincere, but I think it also gives us pause to consider what are we in fact trying to say here. I don't think it's very clear what the intention is, and we would need to see some sort of a written indication of what this means before we just jump and say, okay, well, we'll fix that problem when we get to the clause by clause aspect of dealing with the legislation. Then secondly, Chairperson, the answer by Mr. Ramagatsa in respect of clause 24 sub N and O is quite concerning, because if you look at O in particular, it says that one of the criteria now to be considered should be relevant national and provincial policies and legislation relating to the reorganization of local government. Now, Chairperson, the risk here is The Municipal Demarcation Board, or authority as they propose to call themselves in the bill, is a constitutional entity. It has to consider constitutional issues. And the risk of specifying that relevant national and provincial policies, very specifically as to the reorganization of local government, should be considered, that risk is to potentially subordinate constitutional issues to matters of policy by the government of the day. And that is a significant risk. And that's why, among a list of fairly broadly defined considerations, I am concerned about this very specific reference to policy of national government inter alia about reorganization of local government. What the Municipal Demarcation Board or authority does is to make decisions that should apply for years and terms to come, not to serve a particular government. And I would really suggest that these additional factors is just going to complicate the work of the Municipal Demarcation Authority and open the gate to abuse of process. But Chairperson, I look forward to further opportunities to give input into this draft legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure all of us will continue to have that opportunity, but I'll allow them, if I've noted the difficulty Kevin Naidu is having, a technical difficulty. So the response might also, she sent me a chat that says there's that difficulty. But anyone who can comment on what Honorable Brink have just said, but as part of that as well, we'll continue to have this opportunity to engage with this as we continue. I don't know who to call. Anyone who can comment on what Honorable Brink have said? When I say anyone, the first one would have been Dr. Naidu. And if there's nobody ready, I'll appeal to Honorable Brink to say next time we have noted the issues he has raised. If there's no other person. Honorable members, it looks like Honorable Brink, there will be no response on the basis of that technical glitch that has been reported in the chat.
Honorable Chair, sorry.
Okay.
Yes, I've been, experiencing challenges and I've got disconnected at the time. I think you requested for an input and perhaps to just say to the honorable member, well, generally to all inputs that have been made, we will sincerely consider that. I think this is the beginning of a journey still of further consultations, engagements with this host of stakeholders still, and seeing that the bill could be a Section 76 bill, there could be even further engagements that would be undertaken through the NCOP process. So I think beginning of the journey, still a long way to go, and we will sincerely consider the inputs that have been made here and to be made in further engagements. So thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and all honorable members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members, for today, that concludes the business of the day. As indicated, this is the start of the process, and I'm sure all our focus would be, as we, Honorable, as I was taking, we're taking copious notes, and I'm sure beyond that as well, we are going to engage with the bill, and as more information comes in, we'll continue to engage. Thank you very much. If there's nobody who will die, I will close the session. I'll only see by hand if there's anybody who might feel but I don't see any hand. Can I say thank you very much first to the presenters and those who responded to some of the questions we raised. And thank you very much, members, for your engaging questions. And I'm sure this process is going to be a fruitful process as we represent the people and as we collect information further. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.